Amen. I was like, I got to hear a neat sharing about mentoring and coaching. I was at a coaching's clinic, and here's a very, very successful football player, Jonathan Beasley, led K-State to a Big 12 championship with OU. He was talking about mentoring players and stuff, and I won't go over all of it, but one of the things he said, he was telling young high school coaches and little school coaches, actually I think he was talking mostly to junior leagues, excuse me. He goes, it's important for you guys to encourage the kids on their homework every day. How's your homework? What do you got? And you just let them know every day that it means something. And then he went on, and he, I think he was going through like a repertoire. He wasn't necessarily thinking, but he's going through something. He said, this guy coaches, he's an offensive coordinator at a university. And he goes, and you need to explain and emphasize your freshman year is absolutely the most important year of school you'll ever have, your high school year, ever. I cannot express that enough. And then when they get to their sophomore year, this is the most important year you will ever have in all high school. It's this year, your sophomore year. Then when you get to the sophomore year, the junior year is the most important year you will ever have. This is the year. And he says, by the time you get to your senior year, you're ready for college. And it was just preparatory, but it reminded me of some of the prophecies and stuff. Living right now, not tomorrow. And here it is, just right here, living in the moment. Tonight, here's the teaching. Phineas, the hero. So, who is a bad Phineas? This would be the good Phineas. Phineas, we're going to turn to Joshua 22. So it's going to be lessons in Joshua 22. And the study of a hero that I really never even knew existed. I mean, I've heard about it, but I never had anything pointed out until I was on my knees in my office today. Whenever I prepare for teaching, it's like Yahweh doesn't even communicate to me unless I'm on my hands and my knees. I don't know why. I can't be sitting at my computer. It's probably because I'm like, squirrel, look at this. Got to sit down. There's nothing in front of me but my books and paperwork. But here it was all of a sudden. When I got done writing things down, then all of a sudden he pointed the last part together. I'm like, how did I... Like, wow. And one day we're going to get to meet this guy. Joshua 22. On Joshua 22, what this is really the conclusions of the wars of Israel subduing the promised land for Israel. And at the conclusion of the wars, we're going to find out the three of the tribes that they said they wanted land east of the Jordan, and the terms were, we will go with you to fight and subdue all your land, but we want this land. And they said, okay, after we've actually subdued all the land for everybody else, you can go back. Okay, so now they're out, they're kind of like mercenaries a little bit, because it wasn't even for them, but it's a neat story. So at the conclusion of this campaign, and that was the word I was looking for, these other three tribes are going to go home. This is after a great victory, huge war. A war. Maybe you think of it. Think about World War II. Think about some big things. Finally, hey, they surrendered. Okay? There's parades, all kinds of things. Okay, see you guys later. If somebody would read verse 4 through 10, it'd be good to have adults read.
Now, therefore, that Yahweh your is that Elohim?
Elohim.
Now, therefore, that Yahweh, your Elohim, hath given rest unto your brethren according as he has spake unto them. Now, therefore, turn ye and get you to your houses, to your homes, within the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of Yahweh, gave unto you over the Jordan. Only take ye diligent heed to do the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of Yahweh, commanded you, to love Yahweh your Elohim, and to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, and to cleave unto him, and to serve him, with all your heart and with all your soul. Is that it?
To 10.
Oh. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they took their journey unto their homes. Now, unto the one half tribe of Manasseh had Moses given a possession in Bashan.
We can stop there. We don't have to keep reading. So you can imagine, can you imagine the military in World War II leaving France and Great Britain to come back home? Time to go home, boys! Parades!
Yeah.
We did it! We did it! We're the Joshua generation. We did it. Now here's Yehoshua. Goes, go home. Do you think they're excited about going home and seeing the land that they just inherited? Yeah. I mean, they're around other people's land. Well, we got good land too. We're going to go see our family and our wives and our children. We're going to go see our family. Good stuff, right? And if you keep going on through verse 10, they start explaining what's going on and where they're going. Let's see here. So they go home in verse 9 and then verse 10. Okay. Mom, would you read verse 10, please?
And when they came unto the circles of the Jordan, which were in the land of Canaan, then did the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh build there an altar by the Jordan, an altar of large dimensions. And the sons of Israel heard say, lo, the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and half-tribe of Manasseh have built an altar in front of the land of Canaan, in the circles of the Jordan, in the region opposite the sons of Israel. And when the sons of Israel heard, all the assembly of the sons of Israel gathered themselves together at Shiloh, took up against them to war. Keep going.
So you're going to go, what's going on? What in the world?
Yeah.
Can you imagine after World War II, us going back and sending all our military back to Great Britain and surrounding their island with all our Navy and stuff after war? Does anybody want to go to war right now? What did they do? No? No, but what did they do that's so offensive?
They built an altar.
They built an altar. What's going on here? Okay. Go ahead, Mom.
Where?
Verse 13. We're going to go through 20.
And the sons of Israel sent unto the sons of Reuben and unto the sons of Gad and unto the half-tribe of Manasseh within the land of Gilead, Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, and 10 princes with him, one prince of an ancestral home for each of the tribes of Israel, they being severally heads of their ancestral houses among the thousands of Israel. So they came in unto the sons of Reuben and unto the sons of Gad and unto the half-tribe of Manasseh within the land of Gilead and spake with them, saying, thus say all the assembly of Yahweh, what is this act of treachery which ye have committed against the Elohim of Israel, that ye should turn back today from following Yahweh, in that ye have builded you an altar, that ye might rebel today against Yahweh? Too little for us was the iniquity of Peor, from which we have not cleansed ourselves unto this day, although the plague came upon the assembly of Yahweh, but that ye must turn back today from following Yahweh, though it must needs be that if ye rebel today against Yahweh, then tomorrow with all the assembly of Israel will he be wroth. Howbeit, if unclean be the land of your possession, do ye on your part come over into the land of the possession of Yahweh, where abideth the habitation of Yahweh, and take your possession in our midst. But against Yahweh do not rebel, nor against us rebel, by building yourselves an altar apart from the altar of Yahweh our God. Did not Achan, son of Zerah, commit an act of treachery with a devoted thing? And upon all the assembly of Israel came wrath, so that not he, one man alone, died in his iniquity?
Well, you can imagine now that your comrades, your best friends in warfare possibly, are pointing guns right at you. You go, what in the world's going on here? And obviously you're going to have your swords drawn too. This is going to be a very tense moment. And nobody wants to be at war right now. What did they do? They built an altar. And this was an act of treason, a war. You can imagine this thing is tense. And what's going on? We're going to turn to Numbers. You keep your finger here. It's page 255, or you can remember it. Turn to Numbers chapter 25. It's page 185 in the Rothman Hand.
In chapter
23 and 24, there's a very unusual story about a guy named Balaam. Mm-hmm. He had a talking donkey. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Isaiah's teaching, I know there's an eagle that talks also in the book of Revelation. So there's an eagle. Mm-hmm. Holy, holy, holy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's neat. But anyways, here's Balaam. He's a prophet of Yahweh, and during this chapter, he turns against Yahweh, but he gets hired by a wicked man named Balak, And this is where Baal Peor. So we read Peor in Joshua 22. This is a reference to an occurrence that happened with Moses here at Baal Peor. Before Numbers 25, Balak is trying to, he can't win war against Israel. He can't defeat Moses and Yahweh. So he hires Balaam to do curses, and the curses aren't going to work because Balaam keeps saying blessings. He goes, I can't control what comes out of my mouth. And so in verse 25 is going to be actually what does happen. Chapter 25, verse 1, Balaam does do something. We don't see it here in the book of Numbers. But Mel, will you read just verse 1?
Okay. And Israel remained among the Acacias. And the people began to go away unchastely unto the daughters of Moab.
Okay. Unchastely unto the daughters of Moab. This is after Balaam tells Balak, if you want to defeat them, here's how you're going to do it. Keep your finger here. We'll go to Revelation chapter, let's see here. Revelation 2:14, it's page 255. What exactly happened here? You got to go to, let's see, verse 4.
Chapter 2.
Yeah. Nevertheless, I have against thee a few things that thou hast there such as hold fast the teaching of Balaam, who went on to teach Balak to throw cause a stumbling before the sons of Israel, to eat out of sacrifice and commit lewdness. It was sexual immorality. He couldn't beat them. So he's going to, here's, if you want to get Israel, what you got to do is you got to penetrate them. And how do you do it? You get sin in there. How do you get sin? It's going to be sexual immorality. Do you know who this reminds me of?
Us. From this country.
We have a modern day, what was his name? Balak? His name's Barack Obama. He can't stop the body of Christ. So what has he been doing? He's been forcing sexual immorality everywhere. You will take sodomy. You'll take sexual perversions. You will do this, and he's forcing it in. And people, and if you don't stick up for it, what's happening? What's happened to the Boy Scouts? Now the Boy Scouts is now offering condoms. What's he trying to do? Who's behind Balak? Who's the real? Balak's just the hands and feet of the adversary, right? So who's trying? Okay, and so who Barack Obama working for is the adversary. And so he can't stop the body of Christ in the United States. He's going to do the same thing. How are we going to get him? Sexual immorality. Give them something that's just too good to be true. Now go back to, you see with the lewdness here, verse B, or will give us a reference in Numbers 31:16. We'll go back to Numbers 25. We're going to find out what's going to happen after this. It's just sexual immorality, so right? Let's see, it's page
185.
Okay. Tim, would you read for a little bit?
Yeah. Where do you want me to start? On
verse 2? So Israel remained... let me see. So after Balaam tells Balak, here's how you get Israel. And this is the next thing. What's the next thing we know? They're infected with what? Sexual immorality. Okay. Verse 2 is with the daughters of Moab.
And the people began to go away unchastely unto the daughters of Moab, who invited the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. So the people did eat, and did bow themselves down unto their gods. Thus Israel let itself be unto the Baal Peor, and the anger of Yahweh kindled against upon Israel.
Now how in the world can you get Israelites to start bowing down to their gods that quickly? See the footnote right above it, Baal Peor? What's that mean down here? A footnote B. Can somebody read that?
Master of the generative organ. That what you're asking for?
A Moabitish idol in whose worship females prostitute themselves. How would you like to have some sex with some beautiful women?
Prostitutes.
There it is. You can imagine, here's Playboys, here's swimsuit issues, here's Victoria's Secret. What? lust of the flesh, and every sin is outside the body except for what? Sexual immorality. And that's what Yahweh says, therefore, flee it. Get the heck out. So what, it just starts off right here, kind of innocently. Let's see here. So sexual immorality. So you got female prostitutes. Verse 4. So, and Yahweh's anger was kindled against Israel. If you restart verse 4, please.
Okay. And Yahweh said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and crucify them unto Yahweh in the face of the sun, that the heat of the anger of Yahweh may turn away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay ye each one of his men who have let themselves be bound unto Baal-peor. And lo, a man of the sons of Israel coming in and brought near unto his brethren a Midianite woman before the eyes of Moses and before the eyes of all the assembly of that, the sons of Israel, when they were weeping at the entrance of the tent of the meeting. And Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, saw it. So he rose up out of the midst of the assembly and took a spear in his hand and went in after the man of Israel into the pleasure tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman, in their parts of shame. So the plague was restrained from against the sons of Israel. Then was it found that they who had died by the plague were 24,000.
So how did Balak wipe out 24,000 people? Sexual morality. Boom. Now all of a sudden they're turned on themselves. And the neat word up here in verse 4 says crucify. Have you ever read crucify in the Old Covenant in the Hebrew text? I haven't. Not normally in there. It's a special word here if you get to look it up. And so they're hung up on a tree like a as an example. Here's Moses. And it wasn't Moses that killed this woman, a son of Midian. And remember Moses, who is Moses' father-in-law besides that?
Midianite.
Jethro, a Midianite priest. Okay, kind of think of some of the stuff. They went into a pleasure tent right in the middle of a tent of meetings. Right in front of everything.
Are you talking about an insult?
Well, look what's happening today. We got they call it transgender. It's called transvestite. We've got transvestites. What is this stuff? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas? No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
What all this rest of this garbage we see everywhere, and the idea is there's a war going on, and 24,000 people died just like that, and that was only after who intervened.
Phinehas,
son of
Aaron.
Eleazar, son of a grandson of Aaron. How neat is that? What happened to Aaron's first? Two of his sons didn't have such a good start. You guys remember those guys?
Yeah.
They brought strange fire, which meant, you know what that meant? Strange fire. The fire that they were supposed to make incense was fire that was taken from the altar on the sacrifice that Yahweh approved. That fire came from Yahweh. And they were to take that fire for the incense. Aaron's sons didn't have Yahweh's fire. So they made their own. And that's why they got nuked. But in that need, here's one of Aaron's grandsons. Aaron's going to read about this one day. And what does he do? He stopped a plague. Only 24,000 people died. Only. And then with, let's see here.
In verse 10?
Well, how far did we get going?
We got all the way down to verse 10.
Okay, would you read 11?
Mm-hmm. You want 10? Then verse 10, then spake Yahweh unto Moses, saying, Phinehas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, priest, hath turned back my wrath from against the sons of Israel, and that he was jealous with my jealousy in their midst, so that I made not an end to the sons of Israel in my jealousy. Wherefore say...
Well, that's good right there. We'll stop there. So I didn't end Israel with my jealousy? That's pretty hot. Okay, and Moses didn't do it. Joshua didn't do it. Phinehas the priest did it. And just spear right through and save somebody's life. And you're going to go, golly, thank you, Yahweh, for Phinehas. And here Yahweh goes, somebody had the gall to stand up for Yahweh. Mm-hmm. And also, what happened when the altar goes up? They go, did you learn nothing about Baal Peor? They call it, said Peor. Sin is a cancer. It infects everybody. There is no little sin. And when they went to war, they go, you bring sin into your life, you bring a sin to everybody. Everybody's affected. And they go, did you not forget what happened here? They also reference Achan, Let's see here. Achan is in Joshua, let me see, 6:18. We'll turn there real quick, 2:42. Or, no, that's, I think it's, yeah, that's right,
2:42. It's, sorry.
And then we'll be going back to Numbers 25 and then back to Joshua 22 at the end. And this is great. Ooh, John Shane has teaching the Old Testament dad gave. And here's Achan has his sin, and he thinks that nobody's infected but him. Isn't that all of us?
Mm-hmm.
And you know how you do a sin? Well, I deserve it.
Yeah.
You know where I'm most likely to sin? It's when I've been working 24 hours and I helped her out, I helped him out, and I'm exhausted. I want to do something for me. That's when my flesh is acting the strongest. And that's what Achan did. And you know what? Is everybody here pretty familiar with Achan?
Yeah.
I'll speed up. And Joshua 6, verse 18. Yahweh through Yehoshua says, don't take any devoted things. Don't sin. Or you will become devoted to destruction. They're warned. And 7, verse 5, 36 people die. How many people in this room? If 36 people of our family die, we're wiped out. 36 people are dead, and not just the 36 people die. Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They're on the other side of the Jordan. They're going to get wiped out. Why? One guy sinned. And what John Shannon also said in his teaching, and it wasn't just that one man sinned, he buried him in his tent, and his family was in on it too. They could have blown the whistle on him. And what's neat, I didn't realize till today, it didn't say that Achan's wife died. It's just Achan, his sons, and his daughters. So either he wasn't married, or maybe his wife was innocent. I don't know. But all of them died, and that's what they came back. They go, look, you three tribes, you put up an altar right here, and here's about ready to go to war. You better fess up and find out what in the world's going to happen here, because the sin of what happened to Achan, 36 people died, we couldn't stand, none of this would have happened. And then even more would have a Baal Peor, which is the same thing with the golden calves. You want to really get something, get the sexual immorality thing. Sin affects everybody. And, you know, and so what's happening here in Joshua 22 is a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to do it right now. You can imagine who's got done with war. I want to go home. I want to see my kids.
Yeah.
I want to go see my land. I want to go plow my own fields. The United States knows about civil wars, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody want to fight in that war?
Nope.
Is anybody watching the movie Lincoln? You're going to see, God, especially the righteous. You're going to go, God, I won't go to war. What was the Civil War of the United States over?
Letting people
it was slavery.
Secede
it was
from
all,
the Union and slavery.
It was slavery, yeah. So the reason why they secede is because of the amendment that got rid of abolished slavery. And so there's going to be a whole war over it. And what happened? A lot of people died. Looking back, now we don't live back then, do we? Can anybody in here justify owning what they call them Negroes, an African? Can you justify that? Can anybody today justify what they did was legitimate according to Christian standards? Word.
No.
What did they? How did they justify it?
They said they weren't human.
Christians. How would Christians justify it?
They said they weren't human.
Christians said that there was slavery in the old covenant. There's slaves in the new covenant. There's slavery. There's slavery, right? But how do we know what they did was wrong? Matthew chapter 25, or Matthew chapter 22. Page 25. Yeah, and they did say they weren't humans, whatever justification you had to say. But the Christians, there were Christians that owned slaves.
Yeah.
How do you get around that? Well, there were slaves. Abraham had slaves, you know, and here's slaves. Oh, okay. Oh, phew. I thought we were weird because the people over in Great Britain sure didn't understand it at certain times. Or Canada.
Or Mexico.
That was okay. Now, verse chapter 22, 37 through 40. Would somebody read that for me? Okay, I'll read it. Right above it, it says the footnote 73, the greatest commandment. What is the greatest commandment? 36, teacher, which commandeth, command, I guess, Mom, would you read it? So
I'm trying to find, you better not ask me, I can't even find 22. 36? Yeah, 36.
Hey,
teacher, which commandment is greatest in the law? And he said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy Elohim with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the greatest, this is a great and first commandment. The second like it is this, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. In these two commandments, all the law is contained, and the prophets.
Okay. Is that hard to memorize?
No.
When we are to ahab Yahweh with all our heart, soul, and might, that's by doing His word. There's only one way to Yahweh. Who's that through? Jesus Christ, Yahushua, right? And our neighbors are self. If you're doing something to somebody else that you don't want done to you, guilty. It's easy, right? You even see it on billboards. They call it the golden rule, whatever. But it's universal. It's around the world. It's an innate law Yahweh put on all our hearts. Everybody understands. They know this is what's right. So no matter what somebody would say about slavery, you can't justify it. Because you're not loving your neighbors yourself when you own them like that. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, is there a mark up here on my shirt?
Mm-hmm.
There's not? Not a black spot?
Well,
and
the other stuff.
That one. That's why you don't drive with your top down before you do a teaching. I think I hit a bug.
Oh,
man, I ran into a bug. but before I go on to back to the Civil War, there was a neat note with the annotated Bible. Annotated Bible is fantastic. You can write to the website. Here's www.teliosministries.com. I'm able to download the world's most accurate PDF, so I can do screenshots. I can all, and I'm reading something right there so I can see the grammatical, the emphasis. And then I'm reading this on Joshua 22 in a restaurant. And all of a sudden the wheels start turning. I'm going, well, I wonder what E.W. Bullinger says. And I go to, here's Numbers. Oh, here's what, and I go, I wonder what the annotated Bible says. Here's what the annotated Bible says. This is great. We're going back to Baal Peor. Baal equals Lord. Peor was the mountain on which he was worshipped. That shows chapter 25, verse 18. Baal was a Moabitish idol, and those who called the Israelites were the prostitutes necessary for worship by others. So you have to have prostitutes. Peor also means opening and may have a relation with the worship anger. You see here. But chief of the people, let's see here. Chiefs or princes of the people, the number are not stated here, but must have been 1,000, include 24,000. Here's the other thing I was reading. But it starts explaining what exactly is happening. But down here, it talks about the word hung. It's going to say, it's impaled or nailed. It's really crucifixion. Mm-hmm. Who said crucifixion? Yeah, Rotherham. You get to read that, so it's really neat. Here it is, you got the annotated Bible, you have E.W. Bullinger, and the Rotherham. Now, I'm going to go over to justifying the slavery of the United States. I think the best illustration of loving your neighbors yourself is I saw a commercial, and a mom had these two sons. They were both hungry. She goes, you can split a sandwich. So they make it. Now they need to cut the sandwich. She goes, you get to cut it. And he's like, you got excited. She goes, but he gets to pick which piece he wants. Now, why would you do that? Because if you cut a big piece and a small piece, what are you going to get? If he's picking, is that just to make sure it's equitable? That makes sense. That's loving your neighbors yourself, right? I was going to talk about here is justifications of sin. How could you justify owning sin? Here's a letter from December 18, 1816, here in the United States. And I got this. It was written by Lauren Schwenwinger. I don't know if you guys want to know it. It's a really interesting letter. It's a letter, and it's actually showing court cases in the United States. And it's going to be talking about here's a woman, talk about a property settlement. She was married to somebody in 1795, so it's pretty interesting. And they were married in the land, or the island of Hispaniola. Mm-hmm. What island is that?
What island is that?
Hispaniola is...
Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was Cuba. Okay. But so here's something here. Now, tell me if this sounds justifiable. The memorial of Harriet LaSpierre of the county of New Hanover humbly complaining, so she's writing to the state of North Carolina in 1918. She humbly complaining showeth unto your honorable body that your memorialist, that's Harriet, was married to a certain Bernard Laspeyre, that's L-A-S-P-E-Y-R-E, late of the island Hispaniola in the year 1795, that her friends, more prudent than herself, caused to be secured to her the much greater part of her little property by marriage settlement. This is about a settlement of a divorce. Now, I want to skip down to the things that are kind of important about this divorce and what the complaint is of going to the court. So I'm going to skip to like the third paragraph. He would urge in the most pressuring manner, so she's justifying something about her, obviously her ex-husband, for her consent to sell the Negroes secured to her by said settlement. This is property of settlement. What's the complaint about? What's the property?
Human.
Negroes. He would urge the most pressuring manner for her consent to sell the Negroes secured her by settlement. But they would refuse, and they're fighting back and forth about these things. And then we go back down here towards the bottom. And actually, this whole paper is showing, the intention of this paper is showing how bad women had it. I'm going to say women had it horrible. And they really did, compared to men. But I'm just going to read some stuff to you, and you guys tell me if anybody else had it worse than the women. Down here, your memorialist was at length stripped of her rights, women's rights. She was stripped of her rights that every woman claims, that is so tenacious of the direction and superintendence of her household affairs, devised of her keys, she deprived of the authority of her mistress, her Negroes, forbidden to obey her orders. So here's her woman's rights are being stripped of her because her Negroes were not obeying her. Because she believes her ex-husband told them not to obey her. So she's stripped of her rights. They're not obeying her. So what's the real problem about this? Under penalty of severe punishment, he's threatening her Negroes. Exposed contumely and want and every amp made to render her an objection of detestation to her own children. She's being humiliated. The profits arising from the labor of her slaves, the money her slaves produce, which ought to have been appropriated to support and educate her six children. Child support. The slaves that they had a settlement were for her child support. 1918. They got a divorce in order for her to get child support. I get the Negroes. And the Negroes aren't obeying her, and she's being stripped of her womanly rights. And this is a complaint to North Carolina. And you keep reading on it, and there's all these other court cases. It's going to show divorce, alimony, and slavery. And they're going to look how bad the women had it. Are you kidding me? What about these slaves? What about these Negroes? Here's all the rest of the stuff. I'll just read some of the stuff that I highlight. It's actually 31 pages. It's going to talk about, here's, by virtue of their marriage settlement, he argued their slaves were to remain under her sole control, to buy, sell, and possess property. He was talking about their rights. These people belong to me. What would be her justification of slavery? The kids. I have six kids. What about the kids and their education? Right? When she goes before Jesus Christ, how's that going to fly?
No.
Well, I had to have kids. What about the Negroes' kids? How are they taken care of? Are you loving your neighbors yourself? And so what happened is you keep reading on down here. It's going to talk later on about divorce, alimony, slavery. And a lot of the slaves were used as alimony, and it would be child support today. Here's his other stuff. Tell me how ridiculous does this sound today. Married women were stripped of their cherished rights to govern their slaves. Why would it be important to be able to govern your slaves? It's money. Not, if it's not literal money, they're doing your choice. You don't need money if you have slaves, right? An important proposal to streamline the process in 1808 was hotly debated. And an interesting thing with history. So if anybody wants a copy, this is 31 pages. You can Google, it's called To the Honorable, Divorce, Alimony, Slavery, and the Law in Antebellum Court, or Antebellum, North Carolina. There were so many divorces happening here in the New World that the courts were getting very irritated, going, they're being very irritated. They want to start streamlining things. Does that sound, it kind of sound like what happens today?
Yeah.
Nothing's things streamlined. If you're a white male, you're bad. Everybody knows white men are bad. You're a single mom, you're good, or whatever. It's going to be whatever. You enslave it. But here's the whole thing. But the pastors back then started warning the courts, don't streamline this. They're going to say, one important proposal to streamline the process in 1808 was hotly debated. Supported by many in the legislature, it was opposed by ministers and religious leaders who asserted that a divorce bill, if enacted into law, would loosen the bands of society and turn mankind upon each other like brutes. Mm-hmm. What would happen if they started streamlining divorce? Going to say, we'll start acting like animals. Here's what the legislators that came back and they said, the 1914 law did little to lessen the spent time for the assembly discussing marital problems. And many legislators continued to complain that the extended discussion of divorce petitions took time away from important issues. Those important issues would be taxation, political reform, internal improvements, and the control of slaves and free black populations. Controlling slaves and controlling free black populations is more important than divorce. Love your neighbors yourself. They deceive themselves. You can imagine and say, if you were doing something to somebody else that you don't want to be done, if you don't want the rules to be reversed, you're guilty. Sin is a disease, and everybody is infected. Let me see here. We've got all kinds of stuff. The importance of slaves or property, domestic disputes. Here's divorces. Who gets the slaves? Who are the slaves going to produce? And then the thing... here's another one. It's a real interesting one. And it also said, here's God-fearing men, churchgoers. And the only way you could justifiably divorce your husband, can you imagine being a woman back then trying to divorce your husband?
You couldn't.
Actually, you could. But it's very, very, very difficult. You couldn't vote. I don't know if you could even own land. How would you do it? So the purpose of the papers to show how bad it was for women, I'm going, okay, but man, it sounded bad to me to them, but unless you are a Negro... You're going to go, what about these people? What do they do? And here's this property going back and forth. But it also has cases of ministers. And then here's a husband, here's a wife of a minister saying, he's beating me, he's hitting me. And then they would say that adultery was a reason for grounds of divorce. And they say, well, if you're having sex with the slaves, it could be adultery. You're getting to read through this. But it says, here's these big, here's another one. A number of women who told these assaults recounted incidents similar to one described in 1814. By Love Brady of the Gates County, a young girl who married at age 13 with a dowry of 4 slaves. Those belong to me. Now you're going to fight over these 4 slaves. You know, it sounds fine to you, doesn't it? But all of us are going to go before a judge. And things are going to pass before the fire. And the thing is, this was in 18... The illustration was 1816. Her name is Harriet Las Peyre. Fighting over property. Why? Well, at least in this case, it sounds justifiable. All of us can justify our sin. It was for the kids. It was child support. And in her own friends, it was a woman's right. You know, women's rights, abortions today, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds a lot like, to me, a lot like about Balak. What happened 49 years after 1816? In 1861, the United States went to war. 620,000 people died because of this sin. 620,000 people died because of sin. You're going to, golly. Joshua chapter 22. But it's just an easy way that you say, whether if somebody gets a legal settlement or something like that, would you reverse roles? Yes, I would. Okay, let's talk to the other party, because I bet you there'd be a lot of slave owners. Oh, I'd reverse roles. Oh, let's bring them in here real quick. Let's get a witness. Hey, Kunta Kinte, come in here. They like to call me Toby, sir. Whatever, come on in. She says she reversed roles with you. Let's get some witnesses in here. It sounds really good. It says that in Proverbs, if you say one side of a story sounds real good, to get both sides. If somebody has something that does not look, there's a lot of disputes. Believers, one of the problems with this is the churches go, you can't expedite divorce. What's the problem with that, guys? Why is it, who's supposed to be doing divorce?
The pastors.
The church. The church wasn't doing divorces here. It sure didn't appear like it. It says, dare you go to the unbeliever? Is that 1 Corinthians 6 and 7? You're supposed to be doing divorces. Can you imagine if the same pastor that married you goes, what's going on? Well, he beats me. I know him. I see him every Sunday. I know about you too. Oh boy. Or he goes, she's cheating on you. She's not cheating on you. You could imagine whatever the thing would be. How many things would be resolved if the pastors were doing what the word said? Go back to Joshua chapter 22, verse 21, 255. Actually, that wasn't easy to find, but I found it. There's a lot of cases. And so now we come back to Joshua 22. The civil war is about ready to happen. They get reproved. They show them, hey, and this is what actually we're supposed to be doing. If we love one another. In a loving way. Philippians 2 says, esteeming others higher than yourself, assuming that that this is going to hurt or something. We do it in a loving way to say, hey, we got to talk. Why? Because sin affects everybody, man. It's not just about you. There is no single sin. But here this is. Here's this big war's going on. Don't forget about Baal Peor. 24,000 died. Now verse 22, here 21. Okay, would somebody read?
Then responded the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh and spake unto the heads of the thousands.
I'm sorry. Have you ever been accused of something?
Yep.
And you didn't do it?
Right.
And they're holding swords at you?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Well, it might not be literal, but is this tense? And now they're going to respond. Remember, they got their swords out too. Okay, this is tense. This isn't about arguing. This isn't about not having Thanksgiving anymore. This is about you're going to die. Okay, and here's your response.
Then responded the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh and spake unto the heads of the thousands of Israel. El, Elohim Yahweh, El, Elohim Yahweh, he knoweth. And Israel, he shall know, if in rebellion or if in treachery against Yahweh, do not save us this day, that we should build for ourselves an altar to turn back from following Yahweh, or that we might cause to go up thereon ascending sacrifice or meal offering, or if that we might offer thereon peace offerings. Let Yahweh himself require it, if indeed we have not, rather, out of anxiety and purpose done this thing, saying, in time to come your sons might speak to our sons, saying, what have ye to do with Yahweh, God of Elohim of Israel, seeing that a boundary hath Yahweh put between us and you, ye sons of Reuben, and ye sons of Gad, even in the Jordan, ye have no portion in Yahweh. So might your sons cause our sons to cease from revering Yahweh. We said, therefore, let us prepare, we pray you, to build us an altar, not for ascending offering, nor for sacrifice, but that a witness it may be between us and you, and between our generations after us, that we are to do the service of Yahweh before him with our ascending offerings, and with our sacrifices, and with our peace offerings, that your sons may not say, pardon me, in time to come to our sons, ye have no portion in Yahweh. Therefore said we, and it shall be, when they so say to us, or to our generations in time to come, that we will say, behold ye the pattern of the altar of Yahweh, which our fathers made, not for ascending offerings, nor for sacrifice, but that a witness it might be between you, us and you.
Far be it from us that we should rebel against Yahweh or turn back today from following Yahweh by building an altar for ascending offering or meal offering or for sacrifices other than the altar Yahweh, our Elohim, which is before the habitation. And isn't it neat how they started off? El, Elohim Yahweh. El, Elohim Yahweh. And then they're going to go strike us down if we're saying is wrong. And there's a lot of witnesses here. And here the other tribe's going to go, And as far as they know, Baal Peor is getting ready to happen again, and something even worse. We can't hold on to this. So this is real serious. All my family might die because of your sin. And this is across the river. And they come back and they go, and they explain, this isn't for ascending sacrifices. This is not for or for sacrifices. It's for a witness. Was the making, okay, I guess we'll go, or witness, let me see here, verse 30, so here's a neat thing. So this whole war is about ready to happen, a civil war, it's getting neutralized, and we're going to see a familiar name here in the next couple of verses. And when Phinehas, remember him?
Mm-hmm.
Back with Moses, in Numbers 25, and when Phinehas the priest and the princes of the assembly, but is it the same Phinehas? That's the question. Princes of the assembly, even the heads of the thousands of Israel who were with him, heard the words which the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the sons of Manasseh spake. Then was it well pleasing in their eyes. And Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest. Who did this?
Phinehas.
He had stopped one plague before. And 24,000 people died. He was stopping another plague. This is not how you make friends and influence people. This is going to war. And let's see here. And you get to read on. And what happened was it gets neutralized. Let me see here. Where did I stop?
Today we...
Would you read that?
Today we know that in our midst is Yahweh, and that in that ye have not committed against Yahweh this act of treachery. Now have ye rescued the sons of Israel out of the hand of Yahweh. So Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, and the princes returned from the sons of Reuben and from the sons of Gad out of the land of Gilead unto the land of Canaan, unto the sons of Israel, and brought them back word. And the thing was well-pleasing in the eyes of the sons of Israel. And the sons of Israel blessed Elohim and spake not of going up against them to war, to lay waste the land wherein the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad dwelt. So the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad named the altar a witness. A witness it is between us that Yahweh is Elohim.
Yeah, Yahweh is Elohim. Did they go to war?
No, thank you.
Did they appear to be guilty?
Yeah, it looks like they were. Until you find out why they were put to war.
Well, I mean, after you read it. The making of the altar, was it malicious?
No.
Does this appear to be a misunderstanding? Man, we weren't going to do a sinning sacrifice. Strike me down, whatever this one looks like. And so the next question is, so why did Yahweh record it?
So that we could learn from it.
In my opinion, this was a huge warning. A warning to everybody going, look, this is how serious this whole thing is. Slavery in the United States, 620,000 people died. The believers who didn't do anything to stop slavery before them are going to get to watch all this and watch their grandchildren possibly die in a horrible, bloody battle. You know, one day we're going to get to look over all this, but I believe that this, why would Yahweh even record it? It was just a misunderstanding. No, it was a warning. And that's why Yahweh recorded it. Now we're going to go back to Numbers chapter 25. Now, who is this Phinehas? Which is neat, because all I ever really remember about Aaron was his two sons that got smoked.
Yeah.
And then Yahweh says, don't even mourn over them. I can't even cry. Oh man, how bad were those guys? But he had a grandson that Aaron's going to get to hear about. And would somebody read chapter 25, verse 12 of Numbers? I lost my spot.
Wherefore say, behold me, giving unto him my covenant of peace. So shall it prove to be unto him and unto his seed after him the covenant of our age-abiding priesthood. Because he was jealous for his Elohim and did put a propitiatory covering over the sons of Israel.
Yahweh makes a covenant with Phinehas. Uh-huh. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Wherefore, say, behold me giving unto him my covenant of peace. So shall I prove to be unto him and unto his seed after him the covenant of our age-abiding priesthood. Because he was jealous for his Elohim and he did put a propitiatory covering over the sons of Israel. He put a covering over Israel.
After this,
I can imagine a lot of people at the time going to go, he's a jerk. He ruins family vacations or whatever, gonna go, but Yahweh goes, he put a covering. And then later on, when he does it again, it'll go, dude, calm down, man, put the guns away, relax. And everybody goes home, but Yahweh recorded it.
Yeah.
It was a warning. It was gonna go, take sin very serious. Phinehas was a hero. And then Yahweh gives a whole covenant with it. How cool is that? When we look back at our slavery in the United States, which is, it's easy to look at Israel and these other sins. Yeah, I really don't understand a golden calf. I don't understand some of these things. But when we look at slavery, well, that gets a little closer to home when you're owning a black person. And then the justification for child support. And today you got to go, well, I need the money. You're going to say, well, was child support justifiable if it's through slavery? And you go, you go right to that case, go, is this just, well, no, it's not. Well, if it's enslaving somebody else financially, is it justifiable?
Yeah.
Would you reverse? Oh, I would. Okay, then let's bring the person over here. Let's have a fellowship, get some witnesses. And if she says she would reverse it with you, then you're out the hook, Bob. I'm a witness.
Yeah.
But if they're not going to have this meeting, then we got to talk about you. This is a cancer. It's getting you. It can affect everybody. Okay, we'll wrap up there. We thank you, Father, for this. Tonight, we thank you for your word, and we thank you for helping all of us stretch out into the mold that you are asking us, and that you will mold us if we choose and if we humble ourselves. And we know that I can see that you're the sculptor, and we're like a big ball of clay, but it's up to us to let you work on us and chisel us and you scrape things off, and it's uncomfortable, and it's. And it's uncomfortable, and it's stretching, and it doesn't feel good. But if whenever we doubt you, Yahweh, and Jesus Christ, let us just remember Romans 8:31-32. He did not spare his only son, but delivered him up for us. How shall he not with him all things upon us in favor bestow? Let us remember your resume. And when you're asking us to get rid of some garbage and stuff like that, all of us know, and all of us fall short of the glory. All of us are a work in progress. None of us are complete in Christ. None of us look like Jesus Christ yet. But let us look each one at each other and look at ourselves to say, we got a lot of work to do, but it's worth it. Because look what Christ did. Look what Yahweh did with his son. He didn't spare his only son for us so that we could be with him. And sin is walking in darkness, a separation from you. So we just thank you for helping us get our eyes on you. What about you, like Phinehas did, so that we can throw propitiatory coverings over the ones we do love. My sons and daughters know that my future for you is better than anything you could ever imagine. I do ask you to do some hard stuff. But I reward like no other. Who rewarded Joseph? Who could make it worth Joseph's while? Who could do it? Me. I could. Who could make it worth David's while to be on the run for 14 or 17 years? Me. I use people and I put things in print to encourage you. My blessings are bigger than anything you could ever imagine. I do ask you to do some hard stuff. Because I want you to earn some stuff. I want you to be tough. I want you to suck it up. I want you to lead. I want you to think about me. And knowing that when you think about me and you do what I ask you to do, you're actually helping all those people that are around you. It's not supposed to be easy, but it is supposed to be worth it, and I guarantee it will be if you follow me.